You're listening to Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno, supported by Homewatch Caregivers, whose mission is to preserve dignity, protect independence, and provide peace of mind for their clients and loved ones by providing exceptional home care.
97.9 FM WCHL is pleased to present Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno. Nicole has over 15 years of experience as a geriatric social worker and administrator, working in the long-term care industry to include skilled nursing care, Alzheimer's care, adult daycare, and home care. She also worked as a family caregiver. In addition, Nicole co-founded a nonprofit in the Triangle that specializes in support for caregivers. Now, Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno.
Thank you for joining us today for this episode of Caring Connections on WCHL. Today, we will be talking about the medical home model with Dr. Abigail DeVries, Medical Director for Piedmont Health Services. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So this is a relatively new topic, I guess. I know I've heard about it for a while, but I don't think our listeners probably have. And I'm really excited that you're going to really get into the meat and potatoes of what this is and how this can help some of our listeners today, the caregivers that may be caring for a loved one in their home, and you know why this is an important topic for our community. So let's just start it off. What exactly is a patient-centered medical home?
So it's a concept that really started in the 1970s. Okay. The American Academy of Pediatrics kind of came up with their idea of what would be an appropriate place for a child to receive care that would include some wraparound services and where they would get all of the care and preventive services that they needed. And then it's an idea that would kind of quickly picked up was picked up by family physicians, and it kind of went through several iterations until around the early 2000s, when what we kind of know as the patient-centered medical home today really came into being. And the family medicine kind of adopted it at a time when interest in primary care was really going down.
Okay.
And we were having a real fear of shortages in primary care.
Yes.
And trying to figure out a way to kind of reinvigorate the specialty and put primary care at the center of where patients get care.
Such a big problem. You hear often that we do have a drought in primary care physicians, and it's a very scary thing because that's where a lot of people need to get their care. And from what I have heard, I don't know if it's true or not, but there may not be enough to go around.
Right. And what I've heard recently is the concept of maybe that there's you could argue whether or not there's enough, but there certainly is not even distribution. Mm-hmm. And, you know, rural areas often are underserved. So trying to figure out how we can really attract people to the specialty and make it worthwhile, and then also improve the patient experience.
Wonderful. So let's just say my doctor's office just hung up a shingle that says, I am now a patient-centered medical home. What does that mean to me?
So if someone's actually sort of advertising themselves that way, that means that they've gone through a process to get a designation. And there's three main organizations in the country that are kind of giving that designation, the most popular being the NCQA, or the National Committee for Quality Assurance. And it's a national organization, not federal, but national. And there's seven sort of specific areas that you have to demonstrate that you have kind of systems in place that would make you patient-centered. And I can go through those. There's actually six areas. So for the first one is access to your provider as well as continuity with your provider.
What does that mean?
Meaning that, you know, say at 6 o'clock at night, I suddenly feel ill.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have to go either to an urgent care or the emergency room.
Right.
So in practices such as many of the centers that in our organization, we have hours, some nights until 8 p.m. We have Saturday hours.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't have to fit into the 8-to-5 provider schedule, but it can fit into the patient's life schedule.
Okay.
And then continuity is the idea that when I go to the doctor, I'm going to see my doctor, mm-hmm. as opposed to the walk-in provider for the day or going to an urgent care. So it's someone who knows me, and I might be going for a cold, but they can also make sure that my diabetes labs are up to date, mm-hmm. and that I don't need any refills on my medications, and would know what medications I'm on, so they wouldn't give me something that's going to interact with what I take chronically.
Interesting. I just had a recent experience myself. I had a bladder infection, joy of joys, and I went in just for a normal checkup, and they said, let's just check your urine, and I went in, and they said, just call the next day for your results. They kind of thought, oh, it looks a little funky. We're going to send it out, and I called the next day, and the person who answered the phone said, well, we have the results, but your doctor's not here today, so we'll give you the results on Monday. And of course, me just... I guess ignorance is bliss, just said, well, it must just mean that I don't really have a bladder infection. So that was Thursday. And then we had Friday and Saturday, Sunday. And Monday I called, and then I didn't get a call back till Monday afternoon. And they said, well, you have a bladder infection, and we want you to start this antibiotic. And I thought, holy cow, I just went 5 days with a bladder infection without being treated for it.
You could have landed in the emergency room.
So that's not an example of a patient-centered medical home, is it?
No.
That's the complete opposite of
right. So the other part of that is, especially at our organization, we have a lot of part-time providers. So we also have teams.
Yeah.
So, you know, the nurse who's part of that healthcare team would have reviewed those labs and gone to the provider who was covering and said, can you take care of this? Because this patient probably would feel better if we started them in soon. Wow.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
So we went through the first of the six. What's the second?
So the second is identifying and managing populations. And this is a something that's actually become much more possible with the advent of the electronic medical record, because you can actually search and figure out who are all your diabetics. And then you have the population. So you've identified the population as diabetics. And I use diabetics because that's really the most common chronic disease that primary care takes care of. And then you could say, well, what percentage of my diabetics are uncontrolled or whose disease is not in good control and that we need to do more intensive intervention with? So then you can narrow that group down, and then you can actually contact those patients. And so instead of waiting for them to come back in, you can call them and ask them to come in, or you can have other members of the healthcare team participate in their care.
This all sounds very simple, but I'm sure it's pretty complicated to be able to have those databases to be able to sort like that.
Right, and so it's much easier. I mean, with this... This concept started way before the electronic medical record, and so people would have to keep lists. And so it's much easier now.
Okay. So number three.
So number three is planning and managing care. And so it's really about having protocols in place for, okay, so what is appropriate care of a diabetic? And the American Diabetes Association has very clear evidence-based guidelines. So you don't necessarily have to reinvent the wheel, but you can sort of say, okay, this is what our practice is going to do. And we're going to, like I said, reach out to these patients and ask them to go get their eye exam or ask them to come in for labs. And, you know, if you're lucky enough to have a pharmacy in-house like we are, you can figure out, are they actually filling their medications? And so kind of taking it, like I said, not waiting for the patient to show up in the office, but taking an more active role in the management.
So it sounds like more proactive versus reactive.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
What's the next?
Now, the next is providing self-care support. So not only are we trying to manage the disease more effectively, but we're trying to teach patients how to manage their disease. And there's a really good analogy that I like. So if you're in the hospital and you're in the intensive care unit, you're pretty much in complete control of the doctors and nurses in the hospital. You don't really have much capability to manage your care.
No.
But majority of illness in the United States that we think of is chronic illness. It's managed over, you know,
a period of years.
Yes, you're the rest of your life, even.
Well, we need to take a short break. I'm here today with Dr. Abigail DeVries talking about the medical patient-centered medical home on WCHL, and I'm your host, Nicole Bruno.
Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno on 97.9 FM WCHL, supported by Home Watch Caregivers. Now, more of Caring Connections.
Welcome back. I'm here today with Dr. Abigail DeVries, Medical Director for Piedmont Health Services, talking about the patient-centered medical home on WCHL, and I'm your host, Nicole Bruno. Right before we left for the break, we were covering the six areas of focus for the patient-centered medical home, and I believe we have two more to go. Am I correct?
That's right. So we talked about access and continuity, as well as identifying and managing populations, planning and managing care, self-care support, and then number five is tracking and coordinating care. And this is also a sort of something that we've always aspired to, but is difficult and has been made a little bit easier by the electronic health record. But thinking specifically about referrals to other specialists, imaging tests, and laboratory results. So if I send you to the lab, I am reasonably confident that I'm going to get those results back, but I need to make sure that I get those back. And if I don't, why didn't I? Same with imaging studies, and then with specialists. And I think each of those are obviously uniquely important. Specialty care, especially because the specialists can actually change the medications. They can refer you to another specialist. And if I, as the sort of hub, don't know that, this is where I can kind of collect the information from all the specialists and actually coordinate the care.
Yeah, I mean, in a given day, how many patients does that average primary care physician see?
So we average about 20 a day.
So that would be hard to keep track of all that.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And we have actually, we're working on our referral process. So in an average size site, which has about five physicians mm-hmm. or the equivalent of five physicians, we're doing about 30 referrals per day.
Wow.
And that includes imaging and referrals.
And then to
out.
Make sure you get the pieces back.
Right.
That's a
right.
lot.
So it's a huge
That's
project.
Hundreds.
And I have to say that we have not mastered it, but it's what we're striving for.
Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful. And what's the last?
So the last is measuring performance. And this is something that practices who are interested in quality improvement have been doing for years, but this kind of just puts it as something that's a real focus mm-hmm. in the patient-centered medical home. Mm-hmm. So not only do we set up these programs, but we sure. actually monitor them to see if they work. And we go through these things called PDSA cycles, which is called plan, do, study, and act. So first you plan out how you're going to improve something, mm-hmm. then you do it. Mm-hmm. And you study it and mm-hmm. see if that has worked. And then if it did work, you act and sort of spread it.
It sounds like a very a more complicated version of what my son does in second grade.
Right.
They have them plan it, think about it, draw it, do it, and
right.
then evaluate
it. Right. Right, exactly. And,
yeah.
and so some people stop before the A part but
yeah.
and or the study part and yeah. just say, okay, this is what we're going to do, but you really have to evaluate and see if this is the best method or how can we tweak it. And then the other thing is actually publishing our data so that our patients know what kind of quality they're receiving and that government agencies know, funding agencies know
Wonderful.
What our quality of care is like.
Well, I mean, it seems rather intuitive, but I'm just going to ask a simple question here. How would this help me or my family? Why would I want to go to a physician that practiced this way?
Right. So I think access, you know, who doesn't want to go and see their own physician when they want to see them?
Yeah.
So I think that's number one. And I think it's something that's very hard to do in our current system. And the more we get towards that, that we're seeing the patient when and how they would like to be seen. And then the other big thing is quality. So if I have someone that's going to be looking at my chart and seeing when I'm due for something, I don't have to necessarily remember when my mammogram was, because mm-hmm. I know they're going to call me and tell me I'm due, and they're going to schedule the appointment for me, and they're going to make sure I went. They're mm-hmm. going to follow up on abnormal results. So it's kind of the whole mm-hmm. 360 of the referrals and managing of the chronic care. They're going to give me tools to help me manage my own disease mm-hmm. if I don't know how.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then coordinating. So if I do happen to have a disease that requires me to see many different physicians, how am I going to kind of assimilate all that information? And why do I have to be the one to go back to the primary care doctor and say, well, the rheumatologist said that I should increase this dose.
Mm-hmm.
So if my primary care doctor can reach out to that rheumatologist and in advanced practice have an arrangement with a certain rheumatologist that this is how you'll correspond with us, so, I can feel much more.
Yeah. So it seems to me like this model would actually make it so that the patient might have more quality time with the physician. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is. And then it's also quality time with other healthcare professionals mm-hmm. in the office. So another shift a little bit. So, you know, the physician is really good for a lot of things, mm-hmm. but if I want nutritional advice, you probably, you know, it's better served coming from a nutritionist.
Right.
Or if I want to really know about how all my medications are going to interact, probably I want to talk to the pharmacist.
Right.
And knowing that all those people are going to be on the same page, sharing the same chart, and have this sort of coordination through the physician, but that they're going to all be able to speak to their own expertise.
That's really important.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful. So won't this raise the cost of healthcare?
Yes and no.
Is that a loaded question?
Yes and no. So there's a study that came out in 2010 that showed that cost is higher in a primary care practice. So especially if you're thinking about hiring extra staff
yeah.
who are licensed and experts in their field, of course that's going to cost more. But a study in 2010 showed that in the system overall, there's a savings of $18 per patient per month. And okay. it's pretty significant if you add up, you know,
all
in a large system. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's largely due to reduced hospitalizations and emergency room visits.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to think it also can play into the fact that if the rheumatologist ordered foot x-rays for this person mm-hmm. with arthritis, then I don't have to go and do it because I got the results back.
Mm-hmm.
So you're decreasing duplicate tests as well.
Well, and I think, just the way I'm thinking about it, not knowing a lot about this topic, but, you know, if you're being more proactive in trying to get to that patient before something blows up or a person goes into flare with a rheumatoid arthritis, something
right.
like that, I mean, it seems like that would actually decrease
exactly.
visits as well.
Yeah. So one of the barriers here is that, so we're, as primary care physicians, sort of being urged to adopt a system like this, but no one is giving us a large chunk of money. You know, mm-hmm. the hospitals are not passing on their savings to us. So in a system where you have primary care offices that are offshoots of the hospital, it works very well. And I think there's lots of discussion about mm-hmm. how to make this doable for primary care offices mm-hmm. so that the whole system can save. So
wonderful, wonderful. Share the savings.
Right, right.
Make it more popular for everyone's good. So what's going on in North Carolina related to this topic?
Right. So North Carolina has been on the forefront of this, actually, for several years. There's a medical home program called Community Care of North Carolina, and it's actually the oldest and probably the most successful medical home initiative in the country. It's looked at as a model across the country, and it's actually not a medical practice. It's a group that is contracted through North Carolina Medicaid to take care of a portion of the Medicaid patients, and it's actually a large number of the patients. And there's different networks around the state by county, and they reimburse primary care physicians and an enhanced reimbursement rate for patients to have a medical home. And in our region here, it's called Carolina Access.
Okay.
So physicians get a little bit higher return for seeing those Medicaid patients. And there's actually 14 networks across the state, more than 3,500 participating physicians. And the interesting thing about this organization is that it's actually a physician-led organization as opposed to a managed care company that's come in. So physicians have really been able to spread the model, to engage their colleagues. And it saved the state about $60 million in Medicaid costs in 1 year.
Well, we are going to take a quick break. I'm here today with Dr. Abigail DeVries, Medical Director for Piedmont Health Services, talking about the patient-centered medical home on WCHL, and we will be right back.
Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno on 97.9 FM WCHL, supported by Home Watch Caregivers. Now, more of Caring Connections.
Welcome back. I'm here today with Dr. Abigail DeVries, Medical Director for Piedmont Health Services, talking about the patient-centered medical home on WCHL, and I'm your host, Nicole Bruno. Well, before we get into the resources for people to find out more information, I thought it would really be helpful for people to try to connect with what this really could mean for them. Do you have a patient story that you could share?
Oh, sure. I think I have lots, but I'll tell you about one of my most favorite patients, who's a 65-year-old gentleman who has had diabetes for quite some time, and then over the past few years has developed congestive heart failure, among some other things. And he has probably 8 or 9 different physicians, including the cardiologist, the kidney specialist, his eye doctor, and he's been coming to our site in Carborough for years and years, and I recently started taking care of him. And a couple of things that have, I think, really helped him. So he had, in the last year and a half, he's had about 10 admissions to the hospital.
Oh, my goodness.
And recently, we've kind of slowed that down a little bit, partly, I think, by trying to really coordinate our efforts. So one of the things is that we get the specialty reports from UNC. So every time I see him, I review where he's been, what their recommendations were, and try to incorporate that into how I'm managing his care. And then I ask him, you know, has he been taking his medications? And so one of the issues for a long time was that he wasn't taking his medication. So now our pharmacist works with him. She packs his meds in a pill box every week. He brings it back in. If it's not empty, we know he didn't take his meds. So he's, and then if his meds are changed by one of the other physicians, he'll come in with that new list and we'll update his box. So we're really, at least we now have a grasp of what he's taking. We've educated him on the importance of taking meds.
So I know you brought with you some resources to share with the listeners. Would you like to go over them?
Sure. So there's a couple. There's a really interesting article that was published in the New York Times actually in 2009. But if you Google patient-centered medical home and New York Times, that article will come up. And it's a sort of real kind of how is it going to feel for me when I walk into the office kind of article.
And
so that's really interesting. You also could also go to the NCQA website, and that's one of the bodies that certifies people, and that's the one that I mostly talked about today.
Okay.
And then you could also go to Blue Cross Blue Shield's website, and if you go there, there's an icon for patient-centered medical home to read about that.
Wonderful. Yeah. So any parting words before we end our show today?
Well, I think this is a really exciting time to be in primary care for physicians, and I think it's also a time when we're going to see some real improvement in how we actually care for patients in the United States. And I think this coming in conjunction with the Affordable Care Act is, I really have high hopes that we're going to really be able to shift the cost curve and the quality curve in this country.
Sounds wonderful to me. Thank you for joining Dr. Abigail DeVries, Medical Director of Piedmont Health Services, and I today as we discuss the patient-centered medical home on WCHL. And as always, you may email your caregiving issues to caring@1360wchl.com.
The purpose of Caring Connections is to educate listeners to help improve the quality of life for families, for professional caregivers, as well as those people affected with Alzheimer's disease.
Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno is supported by Home Watch Caregivers. You can hear this and any other program of Caring Connections on WCHL's website, chapelboro.com. Be sure to email questions to caring at 1360wchl.com. Caring Connections is a presentation of 97.9 FM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station.